Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patty LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Three cast albums you can't live without.
Dreamgirls, for obvious reasons.
Obvi.
For obvious reasons. The original. actually, it's Phantom of the Opera.
I love that big answer.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of the music. The Wiz.
That's awesome.
Yeah, The Wiz.
Have you done The Wiz? I mean, you've had to.
I have not. I know. Crazy. I have not done The Wiz.
That seems full on criminal.
Yeah.
Okay. Favorite thing to eat after a performance?
Ooh. Oh, you make me choose one thing. Like, that's so crazy. I would have to say a good burger.
Okay.
A good burger.
I totally get that.
Good burger. Absolutely. Not just a janky burger, but a good burger.
Yeah, no McDonald's drive-thru.
No, no. Like a really good burger. And yeah, we would go get some good fries,
yes.
Good burgers, and maybe a little cocktail.
Oh, just a
just
little.
Just a little cocktail.
Okay, last question. Live performance you'll never forget as an audience member.
Ooh, there was.
See, I know there's so many.
I mean, just recently, I will always remember Cynthia Erivo in The Color Purple singing, what is her 11 o'clock number? Yes. You help me. Help
beautiful.
Me.
Beautiful.
Yes, yes, yes.
I'm here.
Yes. When I tell you, it just pierced my soul. Yeah, that voice. And yeah, she let him have it.
Welcome, everybody, to a musical theater podcast where we discuss the cultural and emotional impact of some of our favorite musicals in theater history. My name is Jeffrey Scott Parsons. You can call me Jeff. Today, we are talking about the musical Play On with someone who I believe to be a true musical theater legend, Miss Yvette Casson. Yay!
Well, thank you, Jeffrey.
I have to admit that I always thought your last name was pronounced Kaysen, so thank you for bringing me up to date on the truth.
That's okay. People have added R's, Carson, Kaysen. Yeah, they just create their own thing, but
absolutely,
that is how you pronounce it. Thank you.
Now, you have a very deep connection to the musical Dreamgirls.
I do. I came right after Jennifer Holliday left.
Okay.
And they were taking the show not only what would be considered another national tour, but it was also an international tour, which meant we went to Japan, we went to Paris.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, and we came back to Broadway after we did the States.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah,
awesome.
So I was on Broadway with it, absolutely.
With it. Mm-hmm. That's so cool. And then not only were you in New York with Dreamgirls, but then you were in the film Dreamgirls, which I see the poster behind you, in which you gave birth to Beyoncé.
I gave birth. I could say I was Beyoncé's mom. I know. And I'm so proud of my little girl. She's grown up to be such a wonderful talent.
She got it all from you.
She got it all. No, it was such a blessing. So honored. You know, Dreamgirls was my first musical.
You're
my
kidding.
First, no, I'm not. It was my first musical out of college. And
oh, my gosh.
I auditioned 4 times. So for those who are listening, don't stop. It is, it's a process. It's a journey. But Michael Peters and Michael Bennett kept calling me in. And that 4th time, they said, "You're in." I don't know what that what it was, but it happened. And there I was rehearsing at 890 Studios, which anyone that's listening and lives in New York, they know all about 890 Studios. The movie was sort of a 360 moment, you know, only myself and Loretta Devine. And I think there were a few chorus people who were in it, the dancers who also were in it too. Yes. Which was really nice. So yeah, it was wonderful. I just get really emotional thinking about it because Michael Bennett, I know that was his dream to make it a movie. And Bill Condon, the director, did an amazing job, I think.
That's so sweet. I've also had the privilege of seeing you on stage, and you are a force of nature.
Oh, thank you very much. I appreciate Truly. That. I enjoy the stage because, one, I just love the process of the theater, the whole rehearsal period, getting to really get into the nuts and bolts of the scenes and sure. you know, with your acting partners. And specific, I mean, if we're talking about musicals, because I've done plays too, and then the music brings another layer to it. I mean, I love TV and film too, don't get me wrong, but we don't have the same, yes, for the monetarily.
That money, it
is,
though.
Yeah, it's apples and oranges, but the work for me, I'm just speaking for me, I just like the work process because we don't always have that luxury with TV or film. So yeah, I really do, and I miss it. I'll be so glad when we can get back to stage. I mean, that's where I live. I always say it's my happy place. It Aww. Really, really is. It is my happy place. When I get to the theater, it's just something about walking in that theater and standing on that stage, and you just stand there and you get to see all the seats before people are in them and kind of get that energy.
Mm-hmm.
I just like to take in that space and be on that stage and have a little small moment before I start to work. It's just kind of my thing to do.
I love that. There's such a hum that comes from a live audience and
yes.
all sitting together, all experiencing the
yes.
show. It's a beautiful thing that I am convinced is not going away, so I can't wait for it to return.
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't think it's going to go away. I think people just have to get to a place where they feel safe again mm-hmm. and comfortable, because there really is an energy, especially with live theater. You need to have people there.
Yeah.
You know, I know I've done that. It's just like you're just kind of on the edge of your seat. Every emotion is being felt, you know, in that song. Like, that's what I was talking about with Cynthia. I'm not yeah. even kidding you. Like, I went from the back of my chair. By the time she finished, I was almost in the back of this woman's head. That was him. That's how far I leaned up. I was like, oh, I'm sorry.
I'm sorry, ma'am.
I'm sorry. I mean, because you get transported into this, if it's really powerful. And that's what Jennifer Holliday did. Like, I remember seeing her in my basement in my parents' home. Entertainment Tonight was doing some highlights of the show. And I heard this woman's voice. And I can't even tell you. I don't know what I was doing, but it stopped me. Like, I just froze. And I was like, the TV. I was like, this isn't even humanly possible. Like, and then to hear. And then I had no idea that same song, I Am Telling You, I would be singing one day, which, by the way, is a beast of a song to sing.
Like, how dare you, Henry Krieger?
How dare you write such an amazing song like that and expect us to hold that note forever?
Right.
No, it was. I mean, just brilliance. She just blew me away.
Did you hear about the Dreamgirls reunion thing that happened at the Ford Theater in L.A. a couple? Oh,
I did.
When was that?
Mm-hmm.
Like 5 years ago?
Yeah, I knew a few people that were. Mm-hmm.
So I got asked to be one of the dancers, and I was also in charge of, because, you know, at the Ford, it's outside and they have those
right.
weird steps in the back
yes.
that like lead up the mountain.
Right.
So I was in charge of helping all the ladies down.
Yes,
the
it's
stairs.
Dangerous.
Yeah, that has given me so many memories.
I'm sure.
That's all I'll say.
Is that one of those we'll talk later over
exactly.
over a cocktail and some
exactly.
dinner?
Exactly.
Okay.
That's for the burger, if you
okay.
know what I mean.
The burger, yes.
So I'm sure everybody's thinking, why aren't you doing a Dreamgirls episode? And here's the thing. It's because February is Black History Month. And while Dreamgirls is an incredible show, it was written by a couple of white guys, directed by a white guy, and Play On is a musical that premiered in the late 90s, directed, choreographed, written, featuring the music of, orchestrated by, starring a cast of all people of color.
Yep.
That is so unusual and blows my mind that it's so unusual, but so incredibly unusual in the musical theater canon. Now, being a person of color, because obviously I'm about as white as you can get, can you talk to me about how that makes a difference to your process and particularly to this show that seems to be celebrating Black artists?
Well, of course, it makes a difference. You're right, being a person of color. Although Henry Krieger, Tom Ion, they were white, they tapped into something I think very special, you know, for Dreamgirls, I have to say.
For sure.
And they brought a lot of the cultural element to the show.
Sure.
And I would like to say or like to think that is because Michael was very smart, and I'm speaking of Michael Bennett. He was very smart to surround himself. Although he was the director, and he was the kind of person like, you know, what I say is what I say, but he was smart enough to put a lot of people around him, and he took their advice. That's what I want to say. You know what I mean?
He listened.
And with that listening, he was able to tap into what we know as this amazing show that will go on and on and on. So sure. To that point, yes, I did that. Play On, yes, it had, you know, like you said, the Black director, the Black writer, composer, cast.
The cast was, yes.
I can't wait to talk to you about them. It was, and I don't even know if I was impacted the same way as I am, you know, in thinking about it in retrospect. Do you know what I mean?
Like it wasn't as present.
I did notice it because, you know, as we were going through, we were sitting in this rehearsal room, and I looked around the room, and there was just these beautiful Black actors and singers and creators, and it just, okay, you did feel like I'm home. Do you know what I mean? So, yeah.
In many ways, it seems like it was representation before there was a real conversation about what that even means in many ways, because we do talk about the importance of seeing Black artists not only on stage, but backstage and behind the table and, you know, everywhere. And what's interesting is in researching the show, that wasn't really part of the conversation in selling the show.
No, it wasn't. And well, first of all, this should never have taken this long.
Amen.
It should have never taken this long. But as I've learned, timing is everything. Everything doesn't happen in the time that we want it. That's just life. But it does happen. And it happens because people, you know, say, wait a minute. Hello. This is not right. And we have to be honest. I mean, there's been several really impactful things that have happened this year. We've had George Floyd, the Black Lives Matter, this election. You know, people just were like, I've got to say something. I've got to do something. Hopefully, this isn't just a thing. This needs to be, you know, we have voices like Ava DuVernay, who said, I want to make a change not just in front of the camera, but behind the camera. You know, I mean, and not just for Black, but for women. Like, there's all these different areas.
Speaking of Ava, weren't you in Wrinkle of Time?
I was. Yes.
So cool.
Yeah. Yes, I was. So I really think there's a timing where this is a moment where, and I think, was it last? No, you know, time is crazy with COVID. It was really 2 years because it just seems like it's going forever.
No, but it's a season.
Yes, it's a season. 2 years ago, or maybe a three, they were talking about the Oscars being so white.
Oscars so white.
You know, Oscars so white. And then, you know, SAG, I'm seeing, you know, they're talking about putting more people of color, not just of African-Americans, but Asian, Latino, Latinx people. I mean, so I just think now we're at a place where we're going to see a lot of change. I see it on TV.
Yeah.
So I don't think I was as tuned in. Like now I would be like, yes.
So take me through how you entered the project, because it started out in San Diego, right?
Yes. Sheldon Epps, who directed the show, he and I became acquainted when I did Sisterella, which was a musical I did at Pasadena Playhouse. And Sisterella was sort of my, I call it my coming out or introduction to Los Angeles, because as we know, LA is not really a theater town. It's a film and television town. Whereas New York,
even though the theater community is huge and incredibly diverse, but so spread out, and we feel isolated and kind of like the redheaded stepchild.
Exactly. And you know, there's the Pasadena Playhouse, which I've done 10 productions there, Sisterella being my first. I had no idea that I'd be doing all these, you know, I'm sort of like a resident. I call a resident actor there. And the Geffen, Dorothy Chandler. There's all these wonderful places to do your work. But, you know, it's still TV and film. So I did this show. It got so much movement. Like, I mean, everybody saw this show. Everybody. And Michael Jackson was one of the producers, by the way, of Sisterella.
Wow, I don't think I realized.
And Robert De Niro was a producer. Yeah, it was huge. So that really was like a nice intro for me. Sheldon was a fan, thank goodness. And right when we finished the show at Pasadena Playhouse, I was somewhere and he called and he asked, he offered the job. You know, we love when we get offers. You know, we don't have to audition. Straight offers.
Straight offers.
Yeah, he offered me Miss Mary and Play On. And yeah, he said, I really would love you to take this character. And, you know, because now I'm creating, every actor loves when they can create a character. Like Absolutely. I did with Dahlia, when you can take it and make it pretty much your own. So that's how I came to be a part of Play On. And we, of course, you know, we went down to the Old Globe, which is an amazing theater.
San Diego.
Amazing. I mean, I'm still friends with quite a few of those cast. We, as a matter of fact, I think it was a couple of weeks ago, one of the cast members posted a picture we took together. It was kind of our anniversary. Yeah, it was how really sweet. Special.
Okay, so Sheldon Epps. The show was kind of his creation, yeah?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And from what I understand, his idea was to take the music of Duke Ellington and pair it with William Shakespeare's Twelfth Night.
That is
and
correct.
The reason that he thought it would be a great combination is, you know, one of the famous quotes from Twelfth Night is, if music be the food of life.
Life, yes.
By all means, play on.
Yep.
And one of the famous quotes from Duke Ellington is, music is my mistress. So he's like, all right, these two are these two are kissing cousins.
Great companions, yeah, great companions.
He brought on, as choreographer, Mercedes Ellington, who just so happens to be
Duke Ellington's granddaughter.
Granddaughter, right?
That is right.
Now, they had been longtime collaborators. They had collaborated before. So she brought with her the entire catalog of Duke Ellington music. And he, along with Mercedes and the book writer Cheryl L. West, decided how we're going to sculpt this thing. How are we going to make it work in a different setting than the original Twelfth Night story? What they came up with is the setting of the Kingdom of Harlem.
Great backdrop, by the way.
Right? So we're talking 1940s Harlem. There is, instead of Viola, there is a young woman coming to the city named Vi who wants to be a composer. Unfortunately, in 1940s Harlem, that's not really going to work for a female.
Right.
So she gets the idea, thanks to her uncle Jester, to dress up like a dude, and then maybe she can find her in. And then, of course, we'll talk about the plot a little bit later of what continues. Now, this production premiered in San Diego. From what I understand, audiences loved it. And a few months later, premiered on Broadway.
That's correct. We didn't have a long run, unfortunately. We should have. We were right across the street from The Life, which I know you know that show.
Another
and
great
Lily,
show.
Lilias White, who's an amazing performer. They just hit and ran. They had a lot of things that we did not have. And you have to have really good marketing, which was crazy because we were in New York where Harlem was. But that's another story. That's another burger story. but yeah, it did get to Broadway.
What's interesting is it seems that audiences loved it. Critics did not. But everybody praised the cast and the energy that you brought to it. Now, right here, I want to stop before we start talking about some of the individuals involved in the show. And I found this quote from a musical theater history book, no less, about Play On. And I'm just going to warn you, I find it incredibly offensive. Here we go.
Okay.
Many reviewers in what have become for them stereotypical reviews of black shows complained the characters were stereotypes, and going further back to notices from the 20s onward, saw the entertainment as stronger on pep than polish or very conventionally high-spirited and Bojangles. Now, I think I can speak for everyone when I say, like, what the fuck? That feels like the most condescending, racially insensitive thing you could say. Mm-hmm. These black people have a lot of energy, but I sure wish they had a little more polish. Mm-hmm. What are you even talking about?
Right.
This musical was meant to celebrate the black artists in the same way that you did in the 1940s at the Cotton Club in Harlem.
Yes.
So where do you think this comes from? I mean, I'm not looking for an actual answer.
I really do think it's just a lack of, well, first of all, I never felt like we were, for the, you know, lack of better words, with people, you know, we weren't shucking and jiving. This was not a shuck and jive. You know, this wasn't a Chitlin Circuit play musical. This was all class. You have, let us just remember, you have Mercedes Ellington, Luther Henderson. I'm just going those
Luther
two right there. Luther Henderson.
Orchestrator, arranger,
who worked with Dizzy Gillespie and Duke Ellington and Ella Fitzgerald and Sarah. Like, do you know what I mean? Because, and I know this because I'm a huge Ella fan. So I have done a lot of research just with her, and his name comes up, and I've also read on Duke Ellington and all of these jazz. I'm just a jazz head. And his name is mentioned in every book.
He was everyone's right-hand guy.
So when you review in that way, I already know. You don't know what you're talking about.
Thank you.
That's how I feel.
Yeah.
I feel. You've missed what was done here. You missed the whole thing. You know, Sheldon, Sherrill West writing, which I thought was a really good book. And the performances.
Yeah. No.
And I can't even, you know, but I don't read reviews until after the show is closed. That's
smart.
Just me.
Smart.
Because you can get in your head, whether it's good or bad.
Sure.
Whether it's good or bad. I just do that as a protection for myself. And I also know it's just an opinion.
Yeah. An opinion that may be based, may I say, an opinion based on ignorance?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
That you simply don't know, because let's be honest, most reviewers are white.
Yeah. There you go. So the perception, it's your perception, what you're seeing. But I'm proud to be a part of that show. Definitely. It was one of the highlights of my career. And I didn't even mention the amazing triple threat of André Deshiels. And every time I say his name, I feel like I have to go, André Deshiels. Because, you know, André talks.
That's just how he talks.
So, and meeting him, I was a little taken aback because I, you know, I'd heard about him. I'd seen him and, you know, I knew who he was, and he's just so warm, but very serious about his craft. Very serious about his craft. And I learned a lot from him by watching him, talking to him. Not only is he an amazing performer, but he's very, very educated in the union part of what we do.
Oh, wow.
He's the one that hit me to all of, you know, as a union member, you need to be plugged into this and you need to know about this. So he's not out there singing and acting. He does the work behind the scenes.
He's a businessman too.
He's a businessman too. And he definitely is all about educate yourself on, you know, the things that you need to know about your union, the do's and don'ts.
I
love him. And I just feel blessed to work with him. And also Tanya Pinkins.
Okay, this is what I want people to know. One of the many things I want people to know after listening to this episode. André Deshiels was a legend before Hadestown.
Yes. Yes.
Everybody was like, who is this person? We all knew who this person was.
Yes.
And one of his big roles was in Play On. He was nominated for a Tony Award for it. Mm-hmm. Tanya Pinkins was a legend before Caroline or Change.
That's true.
Got a Tony nomination for this show, yeah? So that whole stage was just populated by legends, in my opinion.
Right. And it was, for me, it was huge because here I am working with these amazing and talented, smart, giving, because some actors aren't giving, giving actors, performers. I soaked it all up. I tell young people all the time, you know, you need to, you got to soak up everything. Listen.
Open those ears.
Open those ears. Ask questions. Come ready. Do your homework.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm glad you said that. Yeah, Andre was, I mean, he was, you can't mention The Wiz without mentioning Andre DeShields.
Andre DeShields is The Wiz.
Yeah, he's The Wiz. He is The Wiz.
Okay, so I want to share with you how I came to know Play On. At this point, I am a teenager living in a small farm town in northern Utah, and we had a dial-up internet. And what would usually happen is I would, you know, dial up to the internet, and I'd go to playbill.com. Mm-hmm. I would go make myself a sandwich because that's how long it would take to load. And then I would come back and I would read one story. And usually the click that I would choose was upcoming cast albums, because that was something that I could actively participate where I was. And I saw that the cast album for Play On was coming out. So I added it to my Christmas list. And God bless my parents, because they're amazing people. They got me the cast album of Play On for Christmas. So I'm listening to it, and I mean, I know some of the songs. I know It Don't Mean a Thing If You Ain't Got That Swing. Right. But honestly, I was not aware of the catalog of Duke Ellington songs. And this show is responsible for my introduction to the Duke. Mm-hmm. And Play On was something that didn't leave my stereo for many, many, many months. I loved it so, so much. So I wanted to do this show so that we could talk about Duke Ellington and introduce him to anybody who might not know him. Duke Ellington, probably one of the most formidable forces in all of American Western music. He was the king of big band and swing in the 1930s, had his own orchestra. He was not only a band leader, but he also created his own compositions that crossed over into the American songbook. So his footprint is huge in terms of Western music. In doing a little bit of research about him, one of the things that made his musical sound so interesting was that he very specifically picked individual artists to make up his band. Some of the greatest jazz players ever were in his orchestra. Mm-hmm. And therefore, his compositions and arrangements allowed for those individuals to be spotlighted and used in a way that really elevated the sound to something that had never been heard before. Now, the really beautiful thing is, that's what Play On was as well.
Yes.
It was an opportunity to let you all shine like the stars that you are, and I think really elevate musical theater to a place that not only introduces us to this the tradition and music of the past, it's a really beautiful marriage of the past and the present.
Well, first of all, you did your homework, Jeffrey. I was hanging on your every word. I was like, I felt like I was in class. And I was like, wait. No, everything you said is absolutely correct. And I was just looking at the songs that were in the show. Because, mm-hmm. I mean, I had my favorites. And, of course, one that I sung on, It Don't Mean a Thing. No, his music was... It was incredible. And you're absolutely right. His band, you could pretty much everyone in his band was a solo artist in their own right. They went out and became a solo artist, did great music as well.
Yeah.
I really think if we were doing this show now, this would be a good time to do this show. I mean, I've spoken to Sheldon about it a couple of times over the years. And I don't know what the if there's something that reason we can't do it. But anyway, I always said this, we should do it again because I feel like the timing.
to truly celebrate Black artistry in this way, it feels incredibly relevant.
And it was education, and you're not the only one. I mean, we had audience members who were like, I didn't know. They did not know, like yourself, and usually it was a younger person who may not be well-versed in Duke Ellington. But there were also people who were, but did not know he wrote certain songs. Like, it's like,
sure.
Oh, man.
They're like, he wrote this one too?
He wrote this one too? Exactly. Yeah, so it's an education too, especially when we had, you know, they always do the student days when the students come in.
I always love those.
Yeah, I always love those shows because just to watch these young people, it's like a light bulb moment for them. Because you never know. And I know they're, you know how when it's in school and you just want to, you're just happy to go any place because you're out of class.
That's not
you
school.
That's not school. So you don't really care. Like, I'm going to see this musical. I don't know what it is. But but when they tell you that and they go, wow, I didn't really know what was coming. I was really da-da-da-da. And they start asking questions. Then you know you've hit the mark. Mm. And that's what I think this show did. It was an education. It was entertaining. It was funny. And it actually hit on things, you know, a woman not being able to really do the music the way she wanted to do because she was a woman, you know. And it's an acute story, too. Like,
it is.
That's
it's
the
really
other thing.
Sweet.
It's a really cute story with it. And I didn't mention Larry Marshall, who I did the show with. Larry Marshall, another...
He has done more Broadway shows than almost anyone I've ever heard of.
Always working.
And he was your man.
He was my man, yes. And he was the best. I mean, seriously, he and Clinton Derricks and his brother Cleavon, I both work with them. They're twins.
I didn't know that. Oh, my gosh. Yes. I think I just had a breakthrough moment. I think I thought they were the same person.
No. And for a minute, it took me a minute to really know who, you know, like I would get a job and they go, oh, Clinton's going to play your opposite. And I'm like, Clinton. And I'd have to go through my head. Yeah, which one is that? Because they literally are identical. But I said that. I named the three of them because they're just so wonderful to work with. Wow. They're just so wonderful to work with. Larry keeps you laughing, you know, and so does Cleavon and Clinton.
Well, the unfair thing about all of this is that you guys came back to Pasadena and filmed Play On for
PBS.
Great performances for
that
PBS.
Is right.
And with the exception of two numbers on YouTube, I can't find it at all.
Really?
No. And if you know.
You mean you can't find the PBS special?
Yeah, I can't find the PBS. I can't find it anywhere.
It was on for a while, and I wished I should have taped it, and I may have. It may be because that was around the VHS. It wasn't DVR then.
Right.
Which would have been great because you can keep
it. Just
keep,
save that
save
as
it,
long
save
as,
it,
you,
as, long
have
as
the
you need it. But video, I mean, it's there at the library, you know,
oh,
where they
it?
Keep it. Yes.
Oh,
it's at the library,
in New York.
In New York.
Sorry. Yeah, of course. Mm-hmm. I was like, the LA library?
No, I would. I know I'd run down there. No, it's in the New York library.
So. Okay. Let's go briefly through it and talk about some of the numbers. If there are any that are your favorites, shout them on out. Okay. So, like we say, Vi comes to New York looking for Harlem because that's where all of the music is. And the ensemble tells her, which is a very hardworking ensemble to be doing all of that incredibly athletic Mercedes Ellington choreography. They tell her that she must take the what?
The A-Train, yes.
That's
that was
right.
That number, woo, yeah. She whipped us into shape for that. I was out of breath after that number.
Like, I need to go get some water. And Vi sings Drop Me Off in Harlem, what a great song.
It is.
Now, one thing that I didn't realize, Duke Ellington wrote all of the music. He usually paired himself with different lyricists. So all of these songs have lyrics by various people. But one of the lyrics that really sticks out to me and Drop Me Off in Harlem that feels different to me in, you know, 2021 is, I don't want your Dixie. You can have your Dixie.
Mm-hmm. Did you get the reference?
Yeah, like the racial undertones of all of that never came up until now. And this thing was written in the 1930s. Mm-hmm. How was I so blind?
Well, you know, there was a mass exodus from the South to the North.
Right. For obvious reasons.
For obvious reasons. So, of course, he would be able to talk about that.
Exactly.
You know, and put that in there. And I don't know if someone of this generation would even understand that. That's very keen of you, because that's exactly what that meant. I don't want it.
I love when these types of things are in songs that have become standards. Mm-hmm. I'm sure a lot of white people listened to that and didn't think twice.
Well, you know what's interesting? They sat in that cotton club and all those clubs and heard that song, and probably maybe they understood it, but you know, it's in the song. Isn't he great? You know,
right.
Not feeling or not getting that light bulb.
Now, you mentioned the cotton club. That's where Vi goes, you know, mm-hmm. the famous Cotton Club.
Cotton Club. Mm-hmm.
What do you understand the Cotton Club to have been in that time?
I mean, it was very segregated, but it was a place for musicians to, you know, play, to get known. I mean, singers did perform there. I know if you were of a certain hue, a color, mm-hmm. you weren't allowed, or they didn't have you there. You know, lighter skinned women.
Like if you were too dark?
Is that if you were too, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Really?
I mean, you'd be a musician, but as far as a singer, and it was, like I said, segregated.
So there were black audiences, white audiences, mainly white audiences. Was this like a gentrified kind of version of black entertainment and art?
Well, I mean, this was still during, you know, the Jim Crow time. So
sure. They
weren't really doing a lot of black audiences. These were predominantly white audiences. There were clubs, though, that had, black clubs that we could go to just for ourselves. But the Cotton Club, no, not so much.
Interesting. So Vi goes, like I said, to the Cotton Club. She meets her uncle Jester, who was played by, go ahead and say, Andre DeShields in the way that he deserves
Andre
to be.
Andre DeShields. Let me just say, too, I'm going to interrupt.
No, please.
But all of these celebrity musicians played at the Cotton Club. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's what I'm always so, I mean, we're talking Billie Holiday, Fletcher Henderson, Duke Ellington, even Bessie Smith.
Oh, wow.
Like, yeah, there were quite a few, but we were just not allowed to be patrons there, which was kind of crazy. And Cab Calloway. We can't forget Cab Calloway.
Cab Calloway. His influence is all over the place in this
Lena
musical.
Horn.
Miss Lena.
And it was in the Midtown, Manhattan.
Okay.
Yeah.
So a little bit outside of Harlem.
Mm-hmm.
Gotcha.
Yeah. But it was a hot spot. So I'm sorry. Go.
You're fine. So Uncle Jester tells Vi, look, doll, you may be an amazing composer, but there's no way you're going to be able to do it as a woman. But if I can make you into a man, or at least dress you up like one, maybe you'll get your shot. So that's what he does. He gives her a makeover. We love a makeover in a musical.
We love a good makeover. We love a good makeover.
Vi becomes Vi Man.
Mm-hmm.
And Vi Man goes to see the most famous composer who's performing at the club, named Duke.
Yes.
You see where this is going, people, right? And Duke is heartbroken because he is in love with Lady Liv, the famous singer at the club.
Right.
Why is he so sad about her? Or is it just kind of an unrequited love?
Well, he's fine. Yeah, it's an unrequited love.
Got it.
Yeah. They never had, as we would say, the hookup, but he was in his feelings about her.
Yeah. Got the vapors.
He got the vapors.
So the plan gets hatched that Vi is going to go to the club and play a song for Lady Liv, and now the pronouns start getting confusing. And Vi is going to say that the song is from Duke specifically for Lady Liv so that she starts loving him.
Right.
So Vi goes to the club. She sees Lady Liv sing Mood Indigo. That song.
That song, yeah.
And then plays Don't Get Around Much Anymore. A great Duke Ellington song for Lady Liv. Now, the problem is that in the true 12th Night fashion, when she plays the song for Lady Liv, Lady Liv falls in love with Vi, not Duke.
Right.
Now, in the meantime, you have the people who work there.
Mm-hmm.
Uncle Jester, who we've already discussed.
Right.
Miss Mary.
That's me, Miss Mary, who would be her dresser, seamstress, tail, you know, all of that.
Oh, okay. Yeah. For Lady Liv. You're working for her.
Mm-hmm.
And then Sweets, who is
my boyfriend.
Is your boyfriend. And what does he do at the club?
Sweets did just a does bunch of stuff.
Does he do anything?
Yeah, I know. Sweets Sweets actually was, I think he like kind of ran the club a little, you know.
Okay, kind of like a house manager.
Yeah, the house manager. Yeah, that's what we like to think of the Sweets, yes.
Sweet. And they are really annoyed by the owner of the club, who's named Rev. Rev, played by the wonderful Lawrence Hamilton.
Yes.
And Rev is a total stick in the mud. He's very strict. He's very serious. He's also in love with Lady Liv, but can't express it. And so Miss Mary decides to have some fun with Rev and tells him, you know, the reason that you're not getting in with Lady Love is because you're too serious. You need to learn how to sing some jazz. Yeah.
And how to be cool.
Yeah, how to be
and
cool.
And how to relax.
Thank
you. He was very stuck up.
That brings you three to sing It Don't Mean a Thing. And you teach everybody how to scat. Now, this is one of your true talents.
Yes.
So can you please tell us what the secret is to scatting in jazz music?
No. And I only say no because people have literally asked me, can you teach me how to scat? And it's an improvisation.
Mm.
And I mean, there are improvisational classes for people to take in playing, you know, piano and even singing. But I liken it to like when I used to watch Gregory Hines tap, who I just love.
Come on.
It's a rhythmic thing that's happening. And everything is within that measure, that beat, but it's a feeling. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So
you're composing in
my right. I'm going, but I'm making sure that I'm staying within the melody. I'm making sure that I'm staying within the framework of the song. Although the queen of scatting, Miss Ella Fitzgerald, who I adore, she was able to combine, like go outside and of the song and like bring another song. But it's seriously, it's just, and I remember being at school. I went to Berklee College of Music in Boston. And
shout
I remember, shout out to my alma mater, just being in a rehearsal with some students and we were practicing. And I don't know, I just started doing it and they were like, you can do, but I was just did it.
You
I wasn't
tapped
thinking
into
about
it.
Yeah. And I didn't even know that I really could do this.
Wow.
Do you know what I mean? Like, so I kind of found out something about myself. I just realized at that time. And then I just really started listening. Even now when I'm in the car and I'm listening to music, I'll just start scatting to things because that's really what it is. And
can I just like be in your backseat?
You can.
Like a creepy...
Like a creepy guy.
Creepy just, stalker. Just, but all I want to do is listen to you.
It's like, who's the little white guy in the backseat? Yeah. Oh, he's just the guy that rides around. And just
with the boom mic.
Yeah, with the boom mic, just scatting. But it really is, I feel like it's such a gift and I don't take it lightly. So when Sheldon said, this is something, use this, this is your moment. I was like, okay.
Let's do it.
Let's do it. Yeah, we came up with that in rehearsal. He said, no, I want you to teach him to scat.
It's such a great moment in the entire show. And the way that you guys recorded it on the cast album is you get such a great idea for the scene in terms of teaching and you try to start out basic, but then like you just can't help yourself.
I get into my own. Yeah, I just get into, you know, it's like, I'm in it now. Like it's like getting the feeling, getting, you know, at church.
You're
feeling the spirit. They get the Holy Ghost and you just lose it. And that's what happened. And that's actually what Sheldon wanted. You know, he said, just give him the basics. But then you being Miss Mary, you just lose it and you just go into your own. And it was so much fun to do.
That's so wonderful. I love this idea of improv, which I think is in many ways one of the things that makes jazz so special.
Mm.
Because you have to have the natural talent. You have to have the ear to understand like what the melody is, what key you're in. But then you also have to have the freedom to let go and just play and not judge. And what a beautiful principle that can be applied all throughout your life.
Right.
Be tuned in, but then don't judge it.
Exactly. Be tuned in and then just kind of, and that's what's the beauty of jazz, because they were able to express themselves without being just in this box. Mm-hmm. Staying, like I said, you staying within the song, but being creative in your own way and being able to come back, because you got to come back to at some
eventually
point.
You got to come
eventually
back. Gotta come,
reel it in. And that's the brilliance of Ella Fitzgerald. Like, she's the queen of it, man. I've listened to her, and I actually played her in a called Ella Fitzgerald the Musical. And one of the things I did when I was really studying her, I would just listen over and over and over and over and over. And there were some things that they just can't be duplicated. Like, wow. No matter how much I slowed it down or how I listened to it, because it's just her thing. Like, I have my thing and you have mm-hmm. your everybody. So the scat's never going to be the same. And that's why people just usually do a basic Scooby Dooby Dooby, ba da ba doo bop, ba dip dip doo bop, bip. You know, so that's a basic scat, but you can get into a little more, you know.
It's like a fingerprint in a way. It's
exactly.
your own little.
It's like your DNA. It's mm-hmm. like your own scat DNA.
Wow. That's so cool.
Yeah, that's the way I look at it.
That's beautiful. All right. So by the end of the song, Rev figures out at least how to create harmony with you three, and you send him on his merry way.
That is right.
The love triangle gets even more complex, of course, because Lady Liv is in love with Vi. Vi falls in love with Duke. Duke is still in love with Lady Liv. They sing I Got It Bad and That Ain't Good, another great song. They sing Hit Me With a Hot Note and Watch Me Bounce. Like, from here on out, and correct me if I'm wrong, that's kind of the whole plot of the show. The rest of it is just about how we get back with the people that we need to be
with.
That is
exactly it.
But along the way, we have all of these numbers.
Mm-hmm.
I'm Just a Lucky So-and-So for Andre DeShields.
Love it.
Solitude, which is this gorgeous quartet for Vi, Duke, Lady Liv, and Rev.
Yeah, that was a really wonderful moment in the show.
The end of the first act, too.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
The second act has what I believe is the definition of torch song. I Ain't Got Nothing But the
Nothing
Blues.
But the Blues, yeah.
Rev comes back out now in Twelfth Night. Is it Malvolio? Comes out mm-hmm. dressed in the yellow stockings and suspenders, mm-hmm. right, to try and show that he's fun. And in Play On, Rev comes out in a full bright yellow zoot suit, looking cooler than Malvolio should ever. mm-hmm. But he sings I'm Beginning to See the Light, another great Duke Ellington song.
That was a great number, too.
Vi sings I Didn't Know About You. Now we just start getting into, showstopper after showstopper. Rocks in My Bed.
That's the showstopper for me.
Yeah.
I would stand in the wings to watch Larry and Andre. It was my husband, every time he saw the show, and he saw it a lot, he said that was his favorite number. He just loved, and it is. It's because it's just two guys kicking it, drinking, and it would just go on, and they were having so much fun. So that was one of my favorite moments in the show to watch.
And it's all born out of the fact that he's in trouble with you, that mm-hmm. your man Swedes.
Yep.
Is he flirting with like the coat check girl, Cece, or something like that? Is that why Miss Mary gets mad?
Yes. You're good, because I had to go back and think about it. I was like, why was I mad at him? That was it. Yes.
And
but he
so,
was always up to something. Didn't take
sure,
much. She
sure.
loved him, though. She didn't care.
So Sweets and Jester do this great song about how they ain't got nothing in their bed but rocks.
Yep.
Great song. It has it even has its own encore, which, you know, it's a showstopper when it's got its own
encore.
We
used to call it the James Brown moment. You know how he goes off and then he comes back on.
Comes back
just put a coat. Yeah, that was the James Brown moment.
That's amazing. Sweets and Miss Mary have an opportunity to reconnect even after that, and they sing such a sweet song, Love You Madly.
Love You Madly. Yeah, that was cute. It was a cute song.
It's such a cute song. Another great little thing in the cast album for that song, of course, Miss Mary's mad at Sweets, and you say something like, now you know the only reason I'm going with you is because I can't get a cab. And which is a really funny line, but once again, also talks somewhat to, I think, the Black experience of being in Harlem.
And also being a
how
woman,
do you get a cab?
Too.
And being a woman,
being
absolutely.
Woman, yeah, it speaks to that, yeah. The whole sexism thing, too.
I love the show because it is so fun and so energetic, but it has all of these little things that when you look mm-hmm. a little closer,
are saying something.
And that's into the brilliance of Cheryl, because she wrote the book.
Now, Cheryl L. West, who, like you said, wrote the book, is someone who you've collaborated with on several times, right? Didn't she do the Shout Sister Shout?
She did Shout Sister Shout.
And who did you play in that one? You played
Rosetta Stone's mother and yes. Mahalia Jackson.
Mahalia!
Yes.
Oh, man.
Yeah, that was really a lot of fun, too. I actually like playing people, real life people. It's a challenge, but it's because you'll never be that person. But if you can bring the essence of that person, mm-hmm. then I feel like you've done your job. And it required, you know, me padding a little bit because Mahalia was a heavier set woman and kind of lowering my voice because when she sang. So my singing voice was different. And I like those challenges.
We have such a rich history of incredible Black artists.
Yes.
That need to be celebrated. That's so cool. I'm glad that you've had such wonderful opportunities to do that.
And I am too. You know, when I did Ella, every night I had her picture there and I'd sort of speak to her because I needed her to channel. I had to channel her.
I need you.
Yeah, I need you. And I just wanted to make her proud and, you know, for people when they leave to celebrate her. To celebrate her in the way that she should be celebrated, as every character that we do in that
deserves.
Way. I think you're going to get to my other song that I absolutely
love. What is the other one?
Something to Live For, that Duke Ellington wrote with Billy Strayhorn.
Oh, talk to me about that one. Where does that come in the show?
That's in the second act. That was sung by Lady Liv.
Really? Because that didn't make it on the cast album.
I don't think so, no. But I love that song because I actually sang it with Ella. It was one of the songs that I got to sing. And it just happens to be one of my, just a favorite song that I sing anyway in my repertoire.
I don't know that one at all. I'm going to have to look it up.
Yes, go look that one up. Yeah, Billy Strayhorn, you know who he is, right?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, the lyricist that Duke Ellington worked with. And it's a beautiful song. Yep.
Now, in Twelfth Night, there's like the whole thing with the twin brother, and then there's like mm-hmm. a whole duel. That doesn't really happen in Play On. So what ends up happening is, of course, there's that famous Duke Ellington song, Prelude to a Kiss,
right.
in which Vi, before she's decided she's going to leave because there's all of this drama with Lady Liv and Rev and et cetera, et cetera. So she's going to leave, but before she leaves, she is going to play this song for Duke and ask for his help to finish the lyric. So she starts playing the song, and he's the one who thinks of it. And the reason he thinks of it is because he realizes this whole song is the prelude to their kiss. Mm-hmm. Everyone's identities are revealed. Who ends up with who? We got Duke ending up with Vi.
Vi, right.
We have Lady Liv ending up with Rev. Is that true?
They do end up.
They end up together?
Yes.
We got
yes.
Miss Marion Sweets, of course.
Yes. And then Jester ended up with his girlfriend. She was like Cece, yeah.
The Coke girl. Now,
the
what's
Coke
really
girl.
Fun about that character is that he's probably the most quote unquote Shakespearean out of everyone because he's talking in this jive type prose almost sounds like
Shakespearean
verse.
Mm-hmm.
And so he is the one who delivers, of course, the ending speech of if music is the food of life, then let us play on.
Play on, yeah.
The whole show ends with in a mellow tone.
The big number, yes.
But once again, you've got Luther Henderson, who's arranging and orchestrating. So he was able to craft these songs, I think, in a specific way for the musical. So even the end of the whole show, it just keeps repeating, play on,
play on, play on, yeah.
Oh my gosh, it's so joyful.
I'm so glad you enjoyed that. Yeah, I'm really glad you enjoyed it. Because it was such a fun show. It was hard to even believe that it didn't run longer because mm-hmm. it was so different than anything else, you know, on Broadway at that time. And being in New York, Harlem, like literally, you know, up the road.
Of course.
We just felt like, oh, this can't lose.
No brainer.
Yeah, it was definitely disappointing. But I find it has a life.
Hello.
You know, my manager, who is my manager now, when he met me, he was like, I loved Play On. Like he talked about, like you talk about Play On. I had no idea. And so there are people that loved it. They love it. They still love it.
Yeah.
Let me see, when that happened, how old were you? Because that was 1997.
Like, yeah, so I was like 15.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
A baby.
Yeah.
A baby.
I had a Christmas list.
Yeah, thank goodness. What are your parents' names?
Doug and Carla.
Doug, thank you, Doug and Carla, for getting that little baby boy his Christmas gift.
So silly, but it's true, and I am so grateful for it because it opened my eyes to a whole area of music I didn't know. Now, the last thing I kind of want to talk about with the show is that jukebox musicals became a thing after Play On. Mm-hmm. And in the early 80s, there was a show called Sophisticated Ladies.
Right.
There's a rhyme. That was a review of Duke Ellington music, all told in kind of a big, glorious Follies mm-hmm. meets Cotton Club sort of review. Mm-hmm. So here's my question. Would you rather see a jukebox musical, a catalog of songs strung together by a story, or would you rather see a review? Does it depend?
It depends.
Yeah.
It really does. I mean, Sophisticated Ladies was really special. I just thought about because Gregory Hines was in that show.
Mm-hmm. That cast was insane.
That cast was ridiculous. If you have a good book, I'd do the jukebox musical.
It also depends for me on the catalog of songs,
yes.
You know, and the approach that you take to it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
In the case of Play On, I feel like you've got music that is so dynamic that I want it to be connected to choices and characters, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Where
mm-hmm.
you can see how the story would elevate the music.
Mm-hmm.
Do I feel that way about Mamma Mia? I don't know. But that's kind of up to, you know, there are other people who love that show.
That show went on and on.
Ran longer than Play On.
It ran longer, right. And I was like, really? Really? Okay. But you know, there's an audience for everything. And the audience is going to be a certain demographic. Let's not kid ourselves.
Well, look, this show has enabled us to discuss a gorgeous tapestry of art in our country and our history. And I'm so grateful that you were a part of it. And I'm so grateful that you took the time to be with me today. So thank you.
I've so enjoyed it, Jeffrey. And thank you for choosing the song, especially during Black History Month, this show. It's one near and dear to me. And you've certainly did your homework. You evoke some memories. I was like, oh, yeah, that's right. That's right.
I've done so many
shows after that. I've had to.
Oh, my gosh. I can't even imagine.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That happened. Well, thank you so much. I've enjoyed it.
Thank you. As always, if you have recommendations for shows you'd like us to cover on A Musical Theater Podcast, you can always email me at amusicalpodcast@gmail.com. Don't forget to follow us on social media, Twitter and Instagram, at A Musical Podcast for more great content. And while you're at it, head on over to our TeePublic store where we have great designs based on shows past and present. Yvette, how can we keep up to date with everything you're up to?
Well, you can keep up to date with me. I am on social media. I'm Instagram. I am Vet Yvette, V-E-T-E-V-E-T. And Twitter at Yvette Kassan. And yes, I am still, as my son says, Facebook is for old people, but I am still on Facebook as under Yvette Kassan. I don't know if any of your listeners are a Facebook, but definitely IG and Twitter. And I'm on a podcast next week with Angela Robinson, who I did play on with.
You're kidding.
What's that?
That's amazing. What podcast?
Artist Talk.
Beautiful.
So
we'll link that in the episode.
Yes, please. And come check me out. I'd like that. And follow me.
That's amazing. It's a worthy checkout in my estimations.
Yes.
In my lowly estimations.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you again, Yvette. And to everybody out there.
Play on.
If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RISETHEATRE.org, because only together we rise.